In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. My guest today is Clyde Bramley. He's the bass player in the On and Ons, and they're based in Sydney, Australia. The title track to their latest album, Let Your Hair Down, is a recent coolest song in the world. We'll hear some of it now, followed by my chat with Clyde on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
We could have the time.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and my guest today on our Coolest Conversations is Clyde Bramley, bass player in the Sydney, Australian bass band The On and Ons. Title track of their latest album, Let Your Hair Down, is our coolest song in the world this week. It's available from Citadel Records. Hey, Clyde, how are you?
I'm good, Manfred. It's great to be here chatting with you.
Well, thanks for joining me. So, the band features you playing alongside a couple of brothers, Glenn and Brian Morris, the guitar player and drummer, respectively. Are all three of you guys originally from Sydney?
I'm not from Sydney. I was actually born in Perth on the other side of the country. But I grew up in Queensland, which is sort of north of here, 600 miles north of Sydney. I grew up there, and that's where I sort of had my first rock and roll experiences in Queensland, and I moved to Sydney when I was about 22 years old, and it felt like home, and I've been living here ever since.
Well, so you were born in Perth. How old were you when you left?
I think I was 3 years old.
Okay. That's like Perth has got like a really cool music scene, and it's still ongoing.
Absolutely. I know you've talked in the past to Dom Mariani from De Cura 4 and the Stems, and he's still going over there doing wonderful things. And it's funny that, talking about Dom Mariani, the original version of the On and Ons also had somebody who was an ex-Stem in Richard Lane.
Yes, Richard Lane. Yeah. Now, I know, sadly, he passed away. I guess this was shortly before the pandemic.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, just after the pandemic started. I think it was. Yeah. It was very tragic, very sad.
But did I hear you correctly to say he played in an early version of the On and Ons?
That's right. Glenn, Richard was living in Sydney at the time, mm-hmm. and he became friends with Glenn, and Glenn and he, did the odd bit of songwriting together. And so the original idea was them to start a band and play those songs. But then Richard got married and moved back to Perth, where he came from, and he was based over there. So when I joined the band, when they recruited me to join the band, the first album, The On and Ons Calling, was already in the can at that point.
Right. That came out like around 2015.
2015, that's right. So we formed the live band, and we were flying Richard out to play shows with us, which we did for about 18 months. But then it got to the point we just couldn't sustain it, because often our fee wasn't paying for the airfare, I'm afraid. So we had to reluctantly, you know, just say to Richard.
Can you give me an idea? What is it like? You're flying from one end of the country to the other. What would be an airfare? Like, how much does that cost to fly from one end?
Oh, you know, $700 up to $1,000, depending on when it is. It's a long way. It's like flying from LA to New York.
Yeah.
It's an equivalent distance to that. So it's right across the country, a 5-hour flight. So to do that, play a gig and then go back, it was draining everybody, I'm afraid.
Right. Well, in fact, you're absolutely right. It's like a 5-hour flight from here to Los Angeles. Typically, I fly into like the southeast, into Atlanta, and there you've got the tailwind behind us, like about 3.5, and with a headwind heading from east to west, it's more like 4. So you said you were pretty much raised in Queensland. Is that what you said a moment ago?
That's right. Yeah. Right.
Was there much music in your household growing up?
Well, my mother was a singer. My father was a minister of religion, a Methodist minister. And so I grew up around churches quite a bit, and there was always organ music and choral music, that kind of thing. I was sort of forced, like many children, to learn the piano at an early age, and I thoroughly hated it. But in retrospect, I'm glad I have that experience behind me. My mother used to push me into Stedford's singing, like singing competitions, choral competitions. So I spent a bit of time in choirs as a child. And then when rock and roll came around, when it hit me, I persuaded them to let me.
When did it hit you? When did it hit you? How old were you?
I was about 14, and the big song that did it for me was Ichiku Park by the Small Faces, and it's still one of my favourite songs of all time, still one of my favourite bands of all time, the Small Faces. And then, you know, the Beatles, of course, Rolling Stones, The Who, all those kind of things.
Well, you know, so Ichiku Park, that's Steve Marriott and Ronnie Lane writing that, And Lane was the bass player, right?
Ronnie Lane was the bass player. That's correct. Yeah.
Right. So there you go, Mr. Bass Player.
That's right. Yeah.
Maybe there's a connection in there somewhere. Well, why? I mean, you took piano lessons. When did you start? When did you pick up a bass?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I took up the bass after seeing an Australian band called the Easy Beats, which you've probably heard of. I was living in Townsville, which is a long way from civilization, you might say. It's a big coastal city in far north Queensland, a population of about 50,000 about that time. And so we were a long way away from Brisbane, which was the capital of Queensland, and not many touring acts came through Townsville, but the Easy Beats did on one of their last tours. Mm-hmm. And their bass player, Dick Diamond, was playing a Maiton lute bass, which is a teardrop-shaped bass made by the Australian company Maiton. And I saw that and I just fell in love with it. And the fact was, at that time, bass guitars were cheaper than electric six strings. So that had a factor in why I picked up bass as well.
And so you picked up the bass. How'd you learn how to play?
Well, I had played guitar, acoustic guitar. I had the lessons on that for a little while as well. But once again, I was learning. There was a band of brothers in Townsville, the Voss brothers, and they were all music teachers. They had a band called The Legends that played, you know, several nights a week up there. But during the day, they had a music store, and they were all music teachers. And I was getting lessons from their drummer, actually, playing guitar. And then one day he said, why don't you try playing this bass? And the first song we tried to play with him playing guitar and me playing bass was She's Leaving Home from the Beatles. And I thought, wow, I like the way, you know, the sort of the bass moves against the guitar. That's a really interesting way to do it. So, yeah, that sort of put me on that road.
Yes, down that slippery slope. So
yep.
you said you were around 14 when you had this sort of epiphany with Ichiku Park. Were you in any bands during your high school years, equivalent of your high school years?
Yes, in my first band was in high school, and it was called Heavy Blanket, and we played things like covers of Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath, that kind of thing that was around at the time, Creedence. We did them really badly, but we did play a few gigs and had a lot of fun. And I'm afraid I've been doing it ever since.
Well, you mentioned Richard Lane, right? We were talking about him being in the Stems and also playing with in the On and Ons. When did you actually first meet Glenn and Brian Morris?
Well, I met Glenn and Brian. They were playing in a band called Zeros, just playing covers around Sydney, and I was playing in a similar kind of band called Bang Shang Alang, and we were doing the same kind of circuit, which was mostly based around southern Sydney, and our paths crossed a couple of times, and they needed a bass player for a particular show, and the bass player they had couldn't do it, so they asked me if I'd fill in. And one thing led to another, and we enjoyed working together, and they asked me to join that covers band, the Zeros, and it wasn't until later that I discovered Glenn actually wrote songs, and they were great songs, and, we started the On and Ons, or they said to me, well, we've got this other project that does original music called the On and Ons. Maybe you'd be interested in that too. And I said, sure. Let me hear them. But the Zeros, they had come to my attention beforehand, because back in 2012, Paul Collins was touring Australia and he needed a band to be the beat. So he picked up the Zeros and toured Australia with them as his backing band, as the Paul Collins Beat, and had such a good time with them that he took them back to the US for a US tour. And he heard some of Glenn's songs and he went, wow, you really should be recording an album of these. You really should get these out there. Because in the past, Glenn had basically been known as a guitar player. Mm-hmm. And not even as a lead singer, and which is surprising because he's a particularly good lead singer as well as being a particularly good guitar player. So we can thank Paul Collins for pushing them in the direction of making an album.
Well, that is very cool. I have spoken to Paul before, not with in the context of the Coolest Conversations, but he called me up one time out of the blue. So I have a band called The Woggles, and nominally it's based in the Southeast in Atlanta. But I live in, as you know, in Los Angeles, and like the drummer's in West Alabama, about 3.5 hours. You know, the time of my flight heading east is how long it takes him to drive to Atlanta. And Paul wanted to do shows in the Southeast, and he knew the band was on base there, but he didn't realize we were spread out. And I was like, yeah, that would be fine. We can back you, but my ticket's gonna have to come off the top first.
And
yeah, he was like, well, I don't know. And I was like, yeah, I know, you know. So we know that never came together, but we've kept in contact since. A really cool guy. And of course, you know, the music is great. Very happy to hear that things worked out with you guys and him, and that he encouraged Glenn to get some of the stuff out.
Yeah, I mean, Glenn's career has been, as I say, mostly as a guitar player. He was in a band called Kings of the Sun, who were actually poised to do reasonably big things in America, and they toured America, opening for Kiss, toured America and Europe, opening for Kiss. I think this probably late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they had a bit of a falling out with their record company that was behind them, and nothing much ever happened. Glenn ended up back in Australia, and he played in a band called the Screaming Tribesmen, who are quite well known in indie circles around Australia. They've had quite a few lineup changes, but their lead singer, Mick Majew, is still making music today. They're a Brisbane-based band. Glenn was in them for a few years and then basically gave it away for a while, and was just doing this band with his brother, playing cover versions, 60s covers. And then finally in 2015, they made the CD, made the record, and I joined the band, and I was sort of pushed them a little bit to get it out there. And things have been going slowly but reasonably well ever since.
Well, let me ask you about this. You know, being in a band with brothers, I mean, that can be difficult. You know, I don't know whether they have a rivalry or not, but that's not uncommon. But then on the flip side of that, what's the saying? Blood can be thicker than water. What's the dynamic like with you guys and the brothers?
Well, for the past few years, we've actually been a three-piece. And for me, that's been great because when I'm talking to them, it's like talking to one person. It's not like I have to talk to each of them separately. Mm-hmm. I can talk to them both together. They have a really cool dynamic between them. So never any arguments, or if there are, they're really minor. And they've grown up singing together since they were kids. You know, their big brother was a guitar player and singer, and their brother-in-law is a guy called Dennis Wilson, who is a virtuoso guitar player, probably best known from the 70s and early 80s for a band called Carvis Jute. And sort of prog blues, I guess you'd call that band. Mm-hmm. But so they grew up sort of jamming with him. Brian played in Dennis's band for a while, but they've been singing together ever since they were kids. So having sort of close harmonies, you know, Everly Brothers type stuff, you know, John and Paul, that kind of thing, it comes really naturally to them. So, unusual having a singing drummer that's singing harmonies like that, but it really works with them, and it's a great dynamic.
Well, let's talk some about this, the most recent album. The title track is our coolest song, Let Your Hair Down. This is your fifth album, as I'm remembering that right?
That's right, yeah. One of them was a mini album, but I like to call it an album anyway.
Yeah. Well, now, in my liner notes, it seems to give the impression that you acted as an engineer for some of the recordings. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. Apart from the first album, which was recorded mostly with Dennis Wilson at the helm in his home studio, and with him producing and engineering, I've pretty much been the engineer on most of the albums. This last one, Let Your Hair Down, half of it was done in my house, in my home studio, and half of it was done in an outside studio. That particular song, Let Your Hair Down, was one of the ones we did here. Now, I live in just a typical suburban, reasonably modern house. It's a bungalow. Mm-hmm. It's got a pitched roof, a high ceiling in the living room, dining room thing. So I'm able to move around the furniture and put the drums in the middle there and get a pretty good sound in there. So I don't have a background in engineering, you know, musical engineering, but I just picked up stuff by watching online videos and reading books and just trying to do it for myself. Often from a financial point of view, it's easier to do it for yourself. It's cheaper to do it for yourself. And the quality of home recording equipment has reached a pro level now. Over the last, 10, 15 years. So, it's much easier to do at home and get good results. And the other part of the album, the other half of the album, we thought it'd be great to go into a studio and all play in the same room together and get some tracks done that way. And so we did that, and we used a studio called Sugar Plum, which is run and has just been built, in fact, by an engineer that we really like, Richard Ball. Now, Richard is a live sound engineer, and he does live sound at a place called the Marrickville Bowling Club, which we play a lot of gig shows at. And we always like Richard's sound there, and everybody that visits Marrickville Bowling Club is always impressed by the quality of the audio that comes out of the place. So we thought Richard will do a really good job, and he did. He mixed the entire album with me sitting beside him, but he mixed the full Let Your Hair Down album, and I think he did a really good job.
So you mentioned Glenn writing songs, so and he's responsible for Let Your Hair Down.
That's correct. Yeah.
Right, and so does he come up with songs kind of wholly on his own and then presents them to yourself and Brian, or do you work these things up together, or what is the routine for you guys when you're coming up with songs?
Okay, the routine is generally that Glenn will send me a little demos that he's done at home. Mm-hmm. Often it'll just have a drum machine, some overdubbed guitar parts, maybe one or two, and a few vocals that he's put on himself. So it's all him just fooling around in his garage out the back. And he'll send that to me, and he's got so many. It's amazing. It's great to find a songwriter. I'm not a songwriter myself, so finding a songwriter that is prolific and just keeps writing songs all the time is fantastic. I can't believe that he wasn't known as a songwriter before the On and Ons. Mm-hmm. But it's just snuck up on him in later life. But he sent me a song this morning. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but he'll send me the song. I'll have a listen to it, and then we'll sit down, the three of us generally, Glenn, Brian, and I, and we'll just learn to play it so that we can play it live. And then after we've played it live a little bit, or certainly in a rehearsal studio, we can then think about recording it. But we've got a backlog of stuff, and it's fantastic to have that, because it means once we put an album out, we can start on the next one.
The hits keep coming.
That's it.
Yeah. That's it. Well, tell me some about the genesis of coming up with Let Your Hair Down. Do you know what the inspiration was for this one?
Let Your Hair Down, I think, is a reaction mostly to coming out of COVID. Glenn said that he had the song in the back of his mind, but it was something like Let Me Love You or something like that that he had, and he'd had it for a while sitting around. And then once we came out of COVID, everybody was going out and really partying. And I think the first weekend that Australia came out of lockdown, or Sydney came out of lockdown, everybody was out. Everybody was out partying and just going nuts, basically, and letting their hair out. So the title just popped into his brain, and he already had a song that it fitted into. And there you go.
We know I love the keyboard playing on there, and now that I know your mother made you take those piano lessons, you finally put those to good use, didn't you?
Absolutely, yeah. I can only play very simple stuff. Well, I'm not a virtuoso piano player by any means.
Well, no, the song doesn't necessarily need that, right?
Well, that's right. I like to play little simple lines that complement the other things, and hopefully it works together. We have
Let me ask you about that, Clyde. What you were you playing through a using a Farfisa or a Vox or just a Nord with one of those kinds of samples?
Yeah, it's a Nord.
Okay,
That kind of sound. I mean, ubiquitous these days. Everybody uses a Nord, but they're great.
They are. Well, that's it.
Yeah, and I'd really love to have a Farfisa, but they're notorious for breaking down.
Yes.
And you often go to a gig where a keyboard player is playing a Farfisa, and at sound check, you'll see them with the lid open and a soldering iron in one hand going, which wire is it that's not working at the moment?
They're not terribly
reliable. So it's great to have a Nord that is reliable and has all those sounds at hand.
So plenty of tracks on the album got kind of a 60s vibe to them. Why does that era resonate so much with you guys?
I guess it's just when we were growing up and first listening to music, the Beatles were huge. We'd probably be watching the Monkees on TV and the Beatles cartoon show we had out here. And, it's just an era that, to me, has the best music. I mean, there's been great music made all along through the years, but the 60s is the one where I tend to go back to all the time.
Well, the other track I want us to take a listen to off the album that we'll go out with is Lovin' Soul. What's the story on Lovin' Soul?
I think that one is, it's pretty much, as the title says, the person singing just wants to be a loving soul and a nice person and not have too much stress. And Glenn's a pretty cheery kind of person, and that's kind of his philosophy of life, I think, just to... Be a nice person and go with the flow and have a great time. And it's fairly light. It's a fairly lighthearted approach to songwriting. We've now incorporated a keyboard player into the band to play all those keyboard parts. A guy called John Hoey, who's from a band called Died Pretty.
Died Pretty. Yeah, I've heard of them. Yeah.
They're playing a little bit later on this year. They're doing a tour in October, but they don't play very often. And John, who's been to see us play, is an old friend of mine. We actually played on our first record together. So he's joined on keyboards, and we've only done three or four gigs with him now, but it's going well. We really enjoy being able to spread from a three-piece to a four-piece again.
Very cool. Well, Clyde, thanks so much for being my guest today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you for having me, Manfred. It's been a great honor. Thank you.
Well, let's lend an ear now to that other track off your latest album, Let Your Hair Down. It's the On and Ons with Lovin' Soul and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Lovin' Soul. That was some of the On and Ons off their latest album, Let Your Hair Down, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. The album's available from Citadel Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's bassist, Clyde Bramley, for speaking with me today. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast.
Singer-songwriter Lucinda Williams, she has a new album due out the end of June titled Stories from a Rock and Roll Heart. And she'll join us next time around to tell us all about it on your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.